Real change happens when you're consistent, and your hair care regimen and having the hair of your dreams is no different. So enter Vegamore. Love Vegamore. They are sponsoring this podcast today, and I've worked with them for a while. I love their products. They are vegan, cruelty-free, paraben, hormone-free. You name it, they're extremely ethical in this way. And they're very, very high end, very productive. In fact, they sell one bottle of their Grow Serum every 15 seconds. It's that popular, and I can see why. Elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore for a limited time. Get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/vulnerable and use code vulnerable at checkout. That's vegamore.com/vulnerable, code vulnerable, to save 20% on your first order.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So today on Vulnerable, I have the honor of interviewing Eden Cher. She is an actress, and she is premiering her one-woman show all around the country. And it's fantastic to finally connect with her as she was coming up a little bit after me and was inspired by some of my work. And I really loved just making a friendship with her as a mom, fellow child actor, grown up. And I hope you guys enjoy this episode of Vulnerable. Eden, what's up?
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Yes.
I'm so happy to be here.
Okay, wait. So I do have to tell you something.
Yes, tell me right now.
I know you were saying that you think we've met
before. Have we met? Yeah.
I simply do not think so, because this was a huge, huge moment for me when you DM'd me. And I was like, ah, Ren Stevens knows who I am.
You're part of the problem.
I am a part of the problem. But you don't understand how much you meant to me growing up. And I, like, this is, you went to Barnard.
I did.
I applied early to, this is stalker, this is terrible.
No, I love stalker.
I applied early decision to Barnard because of you.
Really?
We were so, not to like follow you, but because
no.
I was like.
It was a good decision.
Yes. I mean, I got waitlisted. And then a week later, I found out that the pilot I had filmed in whatever, I think January, February, mm-hmm. had gotten picked up for 13 episodes.
Amazing.
And I was like, you know, I'm going to stay here, I think, and do
this
that.
This is a sign.
That. And it went for 9 years.
Fucking A. I'm sorry, but that's...
Yeah.
Wait, so then that was... Which one
that was? That was the middle.
That was the middle.
Yeah. So
this is wild, though. This was meant for you.
It was,
Hold on a second. Did you ever do an article where you said that you were inspired by Ren Stevens?
Maybe I did.
Okay, because I'm sure that's I did. What I think it was.
Oh, sure.
And I think I had seen it, and I was super proud of you for saying that, but also recognizing that like there were people who came before you that you were inspired by, and I was honored in a certain way. But I feel like you had said that.
Sure, I did.
I've said it. Google it.
You should. I've said it a lot of places. So who knows?
Hell yeah.
I've said it in my personal life. I've said it publicly.
This is a friendship, guys. I don't know if you picked up on that. But also the cool thing is you're doing a one-woman show that I am 100% backing. All of you need to go and see it. If it's in your town, your area, check it out. You've got the dates?
Yes, I've got the dates. They're on my website, EdenCherLive.com.
Jeanette McCurdy did a one-woman show, and she was workshopping it around LA. I never got a chance to see it. I had kids and moved to Orange County. And so I was way out of the loop on her whole development.
Yeah.
But I mean, once that book came out, I was just like, holy crap. And then I couldn't get her. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's fine. And now she's got this amazing pod that she's doing, Hard Feelings. Mm-hmm. But I think, I don't know if she'll continue to do that one woman thing. I think that was something that really led her into the book writing process.
Yeah.
But it was really unique to see one of us in this child actor community come forward with a perspective that was like, this is what I've learned. Here's the good, here's the bad. And here's what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And so you popped up on my TikTok feed, and that's why I immediately was like, no, Eden needs support. Like, Eden needs to be amplified. Eden is the shit, and I can see it a mile away. It had nothing to do with knowing if you like knew me but I just felt like a very kindred moment. And I was like, no, like, let's connect. And then that was it. And here you are.
I'm like, this is genuinely embarrassing. But that, like,
oh no. Oh, it's okay.
Hearing, like,
well, good. I'm glad.
Hearing, like, from the reverse side, like, seeing the kindredness of it. This mm-hmm. is, this is genuinely embarrassing. But
you don't have to be embarrassed. I'm here.
let's awkward touch again. Hearing, like, it's not a one way. Like,
no,
hearing
it's
you
not.
Feel the same sort of energy. Like,
absolutely.
That, I don't know.
Brunettes need each other because everyone else shits on us, okay?
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the type A's, they get a lot of shit, and you know what? We're ruling the world.
I mean, we do, and sometimes, well, now I think it's actually, we were always partially ruling it, but it was like, we were apologizing for ourselves and, you know, not taking, like, not being like, this is who I am. Like, I think we were afraid of our own voice and our own power.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even tell you, like, okay, so I'm turning 40. Mm-hmm. That's a whole theme right now of all these episodes I'm shooting. And it's really wild. I'm back in therapy, which is great. I don't know if you talk about therapy.
I don't actually talk about therapy in my show, but I talk about postpartum depression.
I talk
about depression. I talk about that
a
lot. So I'm a huge proponent of
You've gone to therapy.
Oh, I've been in therapy for like 12 years.
I really wish I would, like, straight?
Pretty much, yeah.
Dang, see, I really wish I would have not given up. But you know, here's the thing about therapy, right? Like, if you're not, like, really going there to do the work,
mm-hmm.
you're wasting money, time, resources. Like, that to me, I was definitely at certain parts of my life where I wasn't ready. And now, like, I literally, like, went to my family therapist and I was like, we're getting answers.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're doing this together. Are you ready? And, like, she's the first therapist that I feel like it was all sort of right place, right time for the right, you know?
When you say family therapist, was your family going to family therapy?
No, I just had her for my daughter who didn't need it, but, like,
everyone needs it.
That's the thing, right? Is that I'm trying to be a cycle breaker in so many ways and, like, you know, talking about our feelings and, like, talking about the development. And also too, like, I think there's an inherent projection from being a child actor, which I don't think I've talked about with anybody. You know, there's so much healing going on for us on top of being, like, cycle breaking and trying to do this, like, gentle parenting approach in mm-hmm. the new wave of parenting, that there's so much projection of, like, is this me or is this the way it needs to be?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a hybrid of the both?
Uh-huh.
But, like, yeah. So, like, sometimes I feel like I'm projecting my own, like lack of growth in one direction. Mm-hmm. So it's like sort of poetic that my projected daughter's therapist would be my therapist too.
Yeah, totally.
She's my therapist.
Completely.
And she also told me, she's like, if you need me to help you, you can also have your, you know, like, my husband went in with me for one sesh, which was really wonderful. It was so celebratory.
Yes.
Like, I think, like, the proper therapist would be, like, there for you at hard times, there for you to work through the tough stuff to get through the answers, and then also there for you for all the other people to bring in or something.
100%. Having your daughter's therapist kind of be your therapist of it all is, like, you know, it's like, it goes into, you know, self-mothering, and, like, I'm sure you and I both, like, there was just no question. I knew I always wanted kids, but I also, through therapy, through just living life, I've, like, really come into, you know, the concept of, you really need to, there's self
self-parenting also, and it's kind of the same, and you kind of start to self-mother more when you are literally mothering, when you are not, when you are external person mothering.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's like that, I don't know if you've done this, you know, exercise in therapy or at all, the just like, you know, closing your eyes, visualizing little you, and just like giving them, and literally physically hugging yourself, but giving them a big hug, and just saying like, you did it. You're good. You're safe. You did it. And it's such a, it is like, I don't know. Yeah. But having to, like being a child actor and feeling like an adult so early, it is like I'm projecting onto my kids. Like, I want you to have a real childhood.
Yeah.
I want you to, but I also want you to do what you love, but I also,
but
want
also
you
don't
to,
want you to take advantage of me and become an entitled brat.
Right. Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, yes. You know, I, and then sometimes I'll be like, my daughter's seven, and I was like, I had my SAG card by then, okay? Like,
yes.
Or my equity card. And I was like, my husband was like, she's seven, honey. Like, she can, like, talk about this and that. And I was like, yeah, no, I know.
You know what's funny is I thought for a second you said you had your SAD card. And I was like, so did I.
What's a SAD card?
That's not a thing.
It's just being sad.
Just like I knew how to be sad. I knew how to be real. I experienced real
sadness. I could cry on cue.
No, just like I experienced life by the time I was seven. Like, yeah. I knew.
Wait, how long have you been acting?
I mean, I actually haven't been acting since I was seven. But okay. I begged my mom by the time I was like eight. I was like, please. And then she was a pretty good mom. So she was like, no.
Yeah, yeah,
you can
yeah.
do like, you know, theater, whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
And then finally there was an event that triggered that. It was undeniable. I was in third, fourth grade, and Jay Leno came to my school. I don't know if a parent was a producer or something, but basically he was doing like a jaywalking segment, kind of like Kids Say the Darndest Things type of thing, where he would come to, this is the first time he did. He came to the elementary school. And he would ask us questions about, it was Halloween. And so he asked us questions about Halloween and then just answered honestly. And like, he basically, all the teachers were told like, send in three students who will not hate being on camera, who will talk on camera.
Yeah.
And they were like, her, Eden, send her. And so I got sent in and like, you know, we were there for an hour and 3 minutes ended up airing on the show.
Yeah.
And I ended up talking like I was on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Great. He came, segment was really successful. He came back for Christmas, did the same thing. I also got, my answers were funny. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because I'm a little ham.
Have you seen those videos?
I have.
Are they on like YouTube or something?
I wish. No, I should put them up. I have a recording of the VH, like my
phone. That's the hardest thing is like all this stuff's not documented and it's like literally the milestones of your childhood.
Yes.
It's so frustrating.
It's so frustrating. Yeah. It is very frustrating. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to find this Fruity Pebbles commercial I did when I was like 16 forever.
For real.
I just want to see it. I wanted to see how it turned out.
Did you not deep dive on like YouTube and stuff?
I did.
Okay. Because I deep dived. I did a PSA for an anti-smoking and I found it. I did another one. My first commercial that I ever did. I want to show it to you even after.
I want to see it.
Okay, good. It's called Warm and Tender and it was a recalled toy because I shit you not. It was a heating pad shaped like a puppy, like a pound puppy kind of thing. But like the belly button, you'd fill it with hot water. What could go wrong? It was recalled because it leaked hot water everywhere on children.
Right.
So yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I would love to see this commercial.
I will show it to you.
Real change happens when you're consistent and your hair care regimen and having the hair of your dreams is no different. So enter Vegamore. Love Vegamore. They are sponsoring this podcast today. And I've worked with them for a while. I love their products. They are vegan, cruelty-free, paraben, hormone-free. You name it, they're extremely ethical in this way. And they're very, very high-end, very productive. In fact, they sell one bottle of their Grow Serum every 15 seconds. It's that popular, and I can see why. Hey, you can also decide if you want one bottle per shipment or three so that you can always maintain your hair care regimen. Look, as we get older, the hair, it's just duller. It's not like it used to be, especially if you've had kids. I mean, it's just kind of what happens. But I am a huge preventative person. I think that you're needing to take care of things as you go before they become problems. I love Vegamore. I think that their whole system works really, really well from top to bottom, whether it's shampoo, conditioner, or their Grow Serum. They've got some really, really great things you should look into. So check this out. Elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore for a limited time. Get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/vulnerable and use code vulnerable at checkout. That's vegamour.com/vulnerable, code vulnerable to save 20% on your first order. vegamour.com/vulnerable, code vulnerable.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
But yes, I get this.
Yeah,
I get this.
So whatever. So I got called back and then I went on and then the producer of the segment reached out. There were like 10, 15 kids who like got their answers on air.
Sure.
Singled me out, reached out to my mom and was like, is your daughter an actor? Would she possibly be, I know this is crazy, but would she be interested in doing her own segment on The Tonight Show?
Whoa.
And I,
whoa.
My mom was like, okay. And I was like, see, I told you, I'm not Tristana. and so she was so like, okay, funny. You can get an agent. And I did the segment. I did like two, I filmed two segments. It was like an advice column.
Cute.
I did it with my brother.
Oh, how cute.
Yeah.
Okay. So where else are we in our story, in our love story here? Like, so basically you got through after that, like you got through without acting, or you were doing all sorts of stuff through high school and all that?
Sort of. I was doing some stuff here and there.
Yeah.
It felt like I was such a failure. But when I look at my like career from child, I was a child. I felt like
you were a
grown adult.
Failure.
Yeah. I was like, I can't believe I haven't worked. Like, I'm done. I'm over.
Did you
like,
have other 13. Kids around you, though, that were like, you were auditioning? And so
I was auditioning. I had like completely made up rivals. I had.
I'm glad I wasn't that worse.
No way. I was like, I want to be just like her.
Perfect.
No, awesome. Yeah. I think you were just older than me enough that it didn't feel like.
7 years. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, I felt like you were my peer, but not enough that I felt like.
I was the type. I was the type.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that makes sense.
I felt very seen. And so I felt like there was a world where I could be successful because I was like, well, she got on and she played that role.
That archetype.
That archetype, yeah.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Smart. You were smart.
Yeah. We talked about this off mic, but I really do feel like I'm a smart person. I have,
very smart.
You know, yeah, thank you. I'm a smart person now, but I'm like normal smart. I'm normal person smart. When I was a child, I was so smart. I was so smart just because for some reason, it happened very quickly. And then by the time I, you know, got to middle school, kids were starting to sort of catch up, but I was still like, oh, you're very precocious. And then I got to high school, and because I was always really good at math.
Mm.
I was really, really good at math.
Mm.
And I thought, well, yeah, that's because I work really hard. Like, I work hard and I study and blah, blah, blah. And then I got to calculus, and I realized, oh, I've never studied a day in my life because now this is so fucking hard.
Yeah.
And I have to study and I don't know how to.
Yeah.
And so, and other kids who had worked hard and also just like grown their brain in a normal pace,
mm-hmm.
were like, I know how to do this and I'm very smart. And I was like, oh, I used to be that way. I guess not any.
You're, that's why, and then you're, I'm a failure. I'm a failure at all things.
I'm not working.
That's
I'm not
crazy.
Good at math. So what am I doing?
Look, I find that really crazy that even before you hit a big break, that you already felt like this sort of sense of like being in the system and there being sort of like a brokenness in the system. And you were actually on the peripheral of it.
Yeah.
You weren't even directly in it. That's what people don't understand is that, oh, they reach stardom, then they fall off, and then they're just assholes, and then they don't know what to do with their life. And it's like, no, it's actually like, it's like it affects every sibling that's affected by it. It's affecting the kids that don't get the job, that are still trying to get the jobs until they're like at an age where they just aren't even castable anymore kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then they have to make the choice, well, I guess I got to go to college and do a totally different, you know, vocation or something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting system with mental health that's not at all focused in it. I was talking to my producer, Dylan, right before you came in about how many A-list actors are out there when you watch one of the award shows and how many of them, like Reese Witherspoon, started super young. And this guy from Saltburn started really, really young. I think he was in Mud with Matthew McConaughey. And it was like, you watch all these people, but they never claim that part of their story. They never talk about it. And it's frustrating for someone like me who's trying to advocate for change, which I don't give a shit. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. You're going to do what you're going to do. Everyone's doing what they're going to do. But it can be frustrating because you're like, wait, didn't they start young? I'm sure that they had some frustrations. I'm sure it seems like they would probably be in tune with, you know, like all of this. So
yeah,
I wonder if any of them talk amongst themselves because it is such like a small little Millionaires Club thing.
You're right, right.
I kind of wonder. I wonder if there's conversations between folks that started young in that A-list that we just aren't privy to. And if they're making connections that we're making, but they can't be, because if they were making connections that we were making based on there being that failure of rejection, feeling of rejection, feeling of failure, they would want change.
Yeah. What kind of change are you specifically talking about? Like within the industry, within child's lit, like what's your vision? What would you like to see?
Okay, so folks like myself and Allison Stoner, the Looking Ahead program, which I've touted several times, had an individual on from that. They are with the Actors Fund. And so they're basically like half funded by SAG. And they're going to be doing in April like a big 20-year anniversary party, which I'd love to have you there. I'm co-chair of the committee, which is the reach out committee. I'm very honored to be a part of their, Corbin Blue is like their main ambassador, but like, it's essentially like, I'm looking for like minds of folks that know that like we can create more of a mental health safe space surrounding set life. And then, but then also I think with Looking Ahead, where I love the program, because I'm not going to create a grassroots program. That's just, I don't have the time, energy, resources. And it's essentially been around for so long. It just has a couple of things connectively that it's asking for the community to acknowledge it. Like it's not even acknowledged, which is, I think, one of the reasons why like the A-listers, it's like, can they acknowledge that this exists?
Yeah.
To support folks that were in those casting offices with them that didn't get the job, but they did. I don't know.
I completely, completely agree. It is.
I'm not like, whistleblowing. I'm not canceling anybody.
Oh, no.
I just want to be very clear with like what my objectives are when I talk about this. And it's funny because the more work I do off camera, the less I talk about it on camera.
Right.
Sometimes people will be like, well, what's going on with this? And it's like, don't worry about it. If you're not directly a part of my community and you're just here for the voyeuristic like trauma porn of it,
right.
I'm not into that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Too grown.
Right?
You're too grown. Yeah, completely. I think.
And that's what I like about your stuff too, Eden, is that like you're not doing the whole trauma porn thing, I don't think.
I'm not. Like, especially in my show and in my like life, I'm very open about any sort of all of my traumas, but it's not the focus. I'm not saying that people shouldn't talk very openly or consistently about their own trauma. Whatever you do with your trauma is your business, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
That's not my personal style. There is a sort of, I won't talk about something until I've been on the other side of it. I don't like talking, I will not talk publicly about anything that I will talk very openly and publicly once I have at least mostly worked through it, because I'm very guarded about who I led into like different tiers of my, you know, personal life, my own vulnerability. I feel like I used to be just like meet anyone and then be like, you're my best friend, let me tell you everything. Ha! And it was like, well, that's charming. Like, I'm so open. And it's kind of like, well, I don't need to be so vulnerable with everyone. Mm-hmm. And so I think the more publicly I talk about stuff that I'm going through, like currently in therapy, I don't, it's not that I'm ashamed of it. It's that I don't need all of my, you know, all of my Instagram knowing, being in that kind of inner circle for my, that level of vulnerability. So yes, I will talk about my traumas, but it is probably going to be in a lighthearted, funny way and take it very seriously, but in a like comedic way, because that's how, just to show, that's kind of the tone of my show is like, I talk about very, very real traumas and like talk about them in great detail. Mm-hmm. But I hope that the energy you get from it is there's no part of me that's still working through that.
Great.
Like, you can see.
Like I'm safe.
I'm safe. Because that's the only way to kind of feel safe with someone on stage. Mm-hmm. I've learned that that can be in watch. I've watched so many one person shows and the cringe part is, or like with standups, mm-hmm. when you don't feel safe with the person who's on stage for any reason, if you feel like they're nervous or if you feel like they're unstable, that's uncomfortable.
Isn't it interesting how when people sit and like watch you, they're just as affected by whatever you're doing. It's like they're receiving your energy and you're receiving, of course, all that energy. Let me ask you this. I really, truly think that I jumped at booking you for Vulnerable because you're doing something for many reasons, but also what I'm so impressed by. I honestly couldn't do it. I couldn't do what you do. I'm trying to like will myself to even, you know, write a book proposal or do anything like this. And there's something I'm so terrified of, specifically this one woman show. Mm-hmm. Have you walk me through this process?
I think the only way that it happened was I got bamboozled by my husband's writing partner. And she goes on record saying, I did not bamboozle you. This was
y'all
your
decision.
Y'all are
still okay?
Oh yeah, we're great. We're fantastic. Okay, I owe everything to her because she had a one woman show. Her name is Angela Beavers, by the way. She's a fantastic writer. She's great. I mean, she's my husband's writing partner. Mm. But we got drinks December of 2022. And she, for whatever reason, was just like, you have so much to say. Like, you went through this crazy 18 months with my kids. I had this crazy delivery. I had a crazy pregnancy. And it was like immediately after ending this huge chunk of my life that I kind of hadn't really processed. I just went straight into having kids.
Ah.
And she was like, you just have so much to say. You know what you should do a one-woman show. And I really think back on it. I think actually she was just like, I just want someone to do this with. I want someone to do this with me. But I was like, you know what? I do have a lot to say. But it was all very like, yeah, I want to do a one-woman show one day. Like, that sounds great.
It's wild. It's a wild idea.
Yeah. But I had the same thought of like, it's so much fucking work. I don't know if I can even do it.
Yeah, look at this. I can't.
I know. I mean, here's the thing. You can. And I know you can because she was like, you should do it. And I was like, sure. Yeah, totally. I'm definitely going to do it. And she was like, I want to go to Edinburgh this year. I want to go to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. So are you. Like, you are going as well. And I was like, Angela, she had a show from before. Like, she had a show that she had done years ago.
As an actor or as a writer?
She wrote it.
Yeah.
And she's not an actor, but she did, since her story was so personal.
She had a single woman show. Got it.
It was her solo show that she also performed. Mm. And she had done stand-up before, so like she was comfortable enough on stage.
Yeah.
Which another thing I was just like, now I feel like actually I could do it and I want to keep doing it. But before it was like, whew, that's not my journey.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
But she was like, you're going also. And I was like, okay, it's in August and it's February now. I was like, I can't write.
For like Edinburgh. Edinburgh.
It's a huge, the biggest of the fringe festivals. It's the biggest, like,
it's a
whole thing.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh no, you're going to do it. And I was like, okay, Angela. And she was like, apply. And I was like, okay. And then like March rolled around or late February. And she was like, have you applied yet? And I was like, at this point, I'm not going to get in. I don't have a show. She was like, you just need a log line. And I was like, I don't even have a log line. Like, I don't have anything. I don't have a title. And she was like, just make one up. I made one up. I was like,
that is what writing is.
I mean, literally. So I was like, fine. Okay. I'll, apply. No one's going to want me at this point. She was like, just put, I was like, I don't have a website. They want some proof of concept. She was like, put a link to your IMDb profile. I applied to this festival. And now it's like, okay, it was a big success. So I feel like I can say this, but I feel like if Gilded Balloon, the venue that I did it at, hears this, they're going to be like, oh my God, I can't, like you bamboozled us. So I apply with a log, with a made up bullshit log line and a title that I just made up. I was like, this is basically the tone. I know basically what I kind of want to say.
Yeah.
And called it, I was on a sitcom. Because that's, it's, it was the crux of it. And it ended up being a perfect, you know, like, what is it? You need confines in order to be creative.
Yeah.
Having this weird confine of like, it needs to still be able to fit under this title.
The arbitrary confine.
The arbitrary confine actually helped so much.
Yeah.
So I apply and they were like, we'd responded in a day, being like, we'd love to have you. You're applying so late, but we'd love to have you.
And that's a
like,
hack.
It is. It truly is.
It's like when you do the lottery and my grandfather used to win. My grandfather won two cars in church lotteries, two cars in his lifetime. And the way that he did it was that he waited till the very last to put his name in, and he would put a few more on there. And then, yeah, I don't know what it is, but it's a similar, sorry.
That but. Is a hack. No, it is. Because it's sort of, it is. It's like, yes, maybe it's at the top of the basket. Maybe. It's fresh on people's
It's gravity.
Mind. Yeah, it is. yes, and mine was metaphoric gravity.
Mm-hmm. Propelled you.
It did. It propelled me to the success that it ended up being. So then it was March, and I was like, I have until August to write a whole show, put it on its feet, and have it be something that I'm not mortified by. And I just did it. Mm. I just sat, I was like, I can't do this. You know, I kept doing the math in my head about like, what, okay, how much is the deposit for the venue? How much, like, what can I book now that is going to be refundable because I'm not going to get it? Like, I need to be able to refund it by June or July when inevitably.
Oh, there was like a lot of technics into you doing it?
Yeah, well, I was like, I'm very confident that I will not get this done and I will be embarrassed by this, so I won't go.
Oh, you were like voting against you were rooting against yourself almost.
100% the whole time, almost the whole time. But then once I just sat down and was like, I have to do this because I don't have a choice. I have a deadline of August. And then I got, thank God he came back here, my co-star and very, very, very close friend, Charlie McDermott, who played my brother on the show. He and his wife are a directing team, and there is simply no one who knows the material better. and so he and his wife directed the show.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of flipped it. That changed everything.
What was that like then?
It was honestly cathartic. Mm-hmm. It was like weirdly, it was therapeutic and also challenging, kind of because I couldn't bullshit. He and Sarah, but like he especially because he was there with me and we're so close, he could read a false note in like 1 second or be like, did you really feel that way? Or like, is that what that's, and he was able to, I was able to bounce ideas off him and be like, he was like, well, that wasn't my experience of it. Like we had a lot of, we talk like silly things, but we like would talk about what it.
Well, because you don't want it to rest an ego. And so like he kind of took you out of that. Were you in active therapy while you were developing this?
Yes.
Cool.
Thank goodness.
Well, yeah, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. But it was like, yeah, he really, he and Sarah were, they took no shit. And they really, they just helped shape. They gave me homework. They gave me direct homework. They were like, here's what's not working. Rewrite this.
So what propelled them to want to take that time to do that for you?
I don't know.
Just love?
Love. I'll never know. I think for them, it hopefully they saw it also as an opportunity to, as like a career thing.
Okay.
Because I was like, I felt like they were doing me a favor.
Mm.
And I think they on some level were like, no, you're allowing us to sort of showcase our, hopefully, I think that's what they feel, our directing talent, because I go on all sorts of records crediting them with the form of this, the, like the ultimate success of the show.
Collaboration.
Super collaborative.
Yeah.
Super collaborative.
But it also helps too that like you guys had that history so you can almost like promote this angle of it. You know what I mean? Like it's important to propel, like that's why I've always leaned into my past because there's nothing you can do. Like my entire 20s was me trying to figure out a way to get away from it.
Yep.
Like a fucking decade. mm-hmm. like, or more of not working, mind you, too.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, if this is not working, then what will work and what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
So when you perform it, how did it feel to do your first performance of your one woman show?
Terrifying. I was truly, luckily, I did one workshop in front of people who knew me.
Yeah.
And that was, I was like very prepared for that to be the end. I was like, this is the most vulnerable thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
And I just, I please tell me, let me know if I'm going to embarrass myself in front of all of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. The response was so positive. And they were like, it wasn't even like, it's a perfect show. They were like, wow, you can do this. There's so much like perfect. There's never such a thing as a perfect show, but like there's so much relatability. There's so much great things.
Like humanity.
Humanity, whole, yeah. Because my whole show is, you know, it's not explicitly talking about the experience of working on set. It's not, I will say like my experience was not Jeanette McCurdy's experience.
Oh, I wouldn't even say. We all have our own.
We all have our own.
Yeah. And I personally think that comes from the top down, not necessarily the network because they're so busy. But I do think it comes from a showrunner side. And I don't know anything about her showrunner. But like, I think in general, like it is a matter of a top down trickle down. So
yeah.
Did you have a positive experience?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what Charlie and I and like what I really tried to honestly show in my show was that like you can have a generally positive experience and still have it not be and still go through shit.
Of course.
And have like the people from the top. Yeah, right.
I love that.
It's not.
That's actually what I'm actually really trying to show too, is that there's no one thing.
And growing up is hard.
Growing up is hard.
Like it's hard.
Growing up is hard for everybody.
And so having like you still develop complexes based on your experience. And if your experience is constantly being on camera and having people praise you, like.
Well, now I think about everyone is on social media and everyone has the potential to be famous or go viral or that, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone, and it's in the back of everyone's minds that is actively using social media and posting, I'd imagine, that like, there's a goal here. The goal is to be successful. And so everyone can relate to that now.
Yes. Yes. And so I was very sure. I was like, my show is so heavily like my experience as a person on a sitcom. And the crux of the show really is the like labor and delivery of my children.
Yeah.
And then my postpartum experience. Okay. That's like actually most of it. I sort of.
Wait, so can you just like kind of like, I don't want to give spoilers to the thing, but can you mention? Because.
I mean. Hopefully, yeah, it's like, I don't want to spoil anything, but it is, if you want some context for my experience, I'm pregnant with twins.
Yeah.
I was, not currently, thank God, I'm not currently pregnant with twins. Hopefully I don't get pregnant with twins again. Like, God bless them, I love them.
Of course.
Lights of my life.
Of course.
Never want twins again.
Hard. I just, actually, when you told me that, because I knew you had multiples, but then when you were like, oh no, they're the same age. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's like you unicorn.
Yeah.
Like people with multiple kids. I said to you, I go, there's one thing to have one child. There's another thing to have two children. And then there's another thing to have two children at the one time. And that is so, so difficult. Much less, it sounds like, a sort of critical birth experience. So,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I got pregnant with twins and then my pregnancy was horrible.
Okay.
And then I delivered at 28 weeks.
Okay.
And it was hard.
Okay.
I don't know if that fact doesn't mean a lot to people who have not been pregnant.
Yep.
28 weeks. It's like, you can do the math. It's like, that's like seven.
It's 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? 38 weeks? No, 34?
Oh, yeah. 40 weeks is standard.
40 weeks, yeah.
But for twins, 38 weeks is 38. Like pretty standard.
It's 10 weeks early.
It's 10 weeks early. They were not ready.
Yeah, exactly.
They were not ready.
Yeah.
And then I it was already very difficult. You know, they were in the hospital for a very, very long time.
Right. Which means that you were at the hospital
twice
for
a
very,
day.
Very long time.
Also, I live on the east side of Los Angeles, and for some reason, I ended up delivering in Santa Monica.
Oh, man.
So I drove twice a day from the east side.
Oh, my God. That's horrible.
To Santa Monica and back.
Oh, that's frustrating as it is.
Like, that's trauma.
Yeah, it is. No, it is. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's a joke. That's got to be a part of your show.
It was.
It got cut?
It all got cut for time.
We got deep cuts.
Yeah.
We got the deep cuts. I'm seeing where this is heading, and it's actually something that should be talked about. I mean, I had my second baby. I went in a week early, because not the same, but I went in a week early. I was not prepared. I had recently moved to a new house, so everything was in boxes. I'm a nester. If you're type A like me, I needed everything ready. Nothing was ready. Nothing.
You gotta see my show.
I cannot wait to see your show. You're coming to Austin, right?
I am.
Okay, so when we were DMing, she's like, yeah, I'm coming to Austin. I was like, I'm there. I'm so there. I'll be like the mom with the phone. I'll be like, you're doing amazing.
You will appreciate it on so many levels.
I'll probably be crying my fucking eyes out.
You
because,
might.
Because moms just need each other, man.
They do.
Yeah.
They really do.
They really do.
And that's the like, that's a big part of it, is talking about the like, the momming of it all. Being a mom to one infant, two infants, doesn't matter. Being a mom, going through labor. You can have the perfect, the most ideal labor. You're in labor. Oh, I was in labor for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I pushed them out and they came out perfect and my breastfeeding experience was ideal and blah, blah, blah. And it's still fucking trauma.
Yeah.
Like child labor is, people don't talk about the toll that it takes on your body. We sort of do. We have a general understanding that like, yeah, it's the hardest thing anyone will do. It's physical, whatever. But like, I want more people on TV talking about the 3 weeks that I was in a diaper.
Mm-hmm. You're shooting stuff that has a lot to do with the tone of this.
Yes.
It's not even to promote your one-woman show. What I've really liked is seeing you be so yourself. I think that's what works really well on TikTok too. Are you new to TikTok?
I joined a month ago.
That's what I'm trying to say. And how many followers? You're going off at a time where that's almost impossible to do.
I know. I can't believe the response that I... It all
You
started,
deserve it.
Yeah.
I want you to know that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You deserve it because you're being authentic. You're not, you know, like some plastic person, like you could be, you're gorgeous, but like you're not doing that.
No, yeah.
And you're also like, people want to see someone like you succeed because they know you well. They quote unquote grew up with you,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
9 years, that's a freaking long time.
It is a long time.
Oh, I have this new thing where I ask people to ask me questions.
Oh, yes,
for my guests.
Yes.
So I did have a fun little question. Let's see. Leah Glacia. Mm-hmm. Has asked, what moment or moments and memories working on the middle are you going to cherish forever?
All of it. But like even the bad parts. But what sticks out, this was my gut reaction. This was my like.
Your first.
My first.
When
like,
I
oh,
said
this
that?
Is what, yeah.
Okay.
I have this inside joke with Charlie. You know, the hours were a lot. Mm-hmm. And there were plenty of days where Charlie and I, all of us would just, it was our 16 hour, not, we never went quite 17 hours, but I think after 12 hours, you get a little loopy.
Yeah.
It starts to go.
Yeah.
And one night, I don't know, I couldn't tell you how, but somehow Charlie started saying to me, you have to pay the price, the rice price. Nothing, nonsense, gibberish. Absolute gibberish words, but we said it over and over and over for years after. Just when we're in our 30s, and sometimes I'll just text and be like, you have to pay the rice price. I just remember sitting waiting for our cue to go on for some big scene where there were 18 angles of coverage, where we were in the laundry room with sitting on the dryer, like trying to stay out of shot, and me just trying so hard to still like hear my cue, but not laugh and have him be like, I mean, you can't hear it because it's pot, but like mouthing to me like. That's
yeah.
Like my most cherished memory.
Because you know why? That's the community aspect of it, that people are like, oh, well, aren't you like a family? And I challenge that notion because I do think that like, I think it's actually pretty manipulative to say that like casts are families.
Uh-huh.
I used to think it, I truly did, but I think I've come to terms with the fact that it's a community And even in that community, that it's tribal, actually. Mm-hmm. And so some people will split off and there'll be cliques in them. There'll be positive and negatives entities in that clique or that community, that tribe, however you want to say it, basically. Not everyone gets along. And that's 9 times out of 10, that's what's going to happen.
Totally.
And for whatever reasons.
No, totally. And it does, I completely agree that it is kind of manipulative because it puts you in this position where you don't want
to. Well, it's toxic. Well, I have to love them. They're my family. No, they're your coworkers.
Yes.
you're a young person that's working in this adult environment. It misallocates like what the professionalism that needs to transpire on that set.
Yes.
So it is manipulative, I will say.
It can be really, it can be harmful when. Exactly.
But like, how else are you going to process it though, as a young person spending time, that much time on set, because you spend more time on set than you do with your actual family.
Yes.
And just like when I put my kids into school, they spend more time in this daycare system of school than they do with us. And the teachers actually told us that, which is why I fucking volunteer for everything.
Yeah.
I show up for everything because I was like, you know what? If I can't control that because I do want them to have that childhood, I will be there. I will be at anything and everything that I would like to try to be at. I'm not going to give up.
No.
I'll project my issues on them until they're happy, grown up adult.
Totally. Truly the gentle parenting, the non-projecting, the not having expectations.
Yeah.
It's like, and also the boundaries, consent,
all
consent,
this stuff. Big time. Like, is that all us? That's all us.
It's all us. All the things we wish.
And
we
it's all in
had.
Your. It's all in your one woman show. It sounds like it's all sort of a thematically. Lot of it's in,
yes, 100%.
Okay,
100%.
I'm so excited for you.
I'm really, really, really.
Excited. Do you feel like this will lead to a book, or what are your goals?
I think after I tour, I want to. It might. My goal is that it leads to a special.
Yes.
Hey. Hey, Netflix, hey, anyone, it's a great show.
Well, I mean, if they can green light, you know, a lot of the comedians that are, you know, you should be able to
so
do it.
So many comedians.
It means a lot to me that you'd come and share and just from our parasocial, you know, little interaction.
Yeah, I think you are. You're great.
Thanks. You're
like,
great too.
It's like, you know, like never meet your idols, like meet them sometimes, you know?
And then become friends.
And become friends.
And then adopted. Thank you. Thank you.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.